नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय थयो फगुद फरिरब्द खांदरो थयो फगुद फरिरब्द खांदरो रहो नुमंत्रेर उपकृष्ट चेतना रहो नुमंत्रेर उपकृष्ट चेतना. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Queen Puranjani embraced the king, and the king also responded by embracing her shoulders. In this way, in a solitary place, they enjoyed joking words. Thus King Puranjani became very much captivated by his beautiful wife and deviated from his good sense. He forgot that the passing of days and nights meant that his span of life was being reduced without profit. Please repeat. Queen Puranjani embraced the king, and the king also responded by embracing her shoulders. In this way, in a solitary place, they enjoyed joking words. Thus, King Puranjani became very much captivated by his beautiful wife and deviated from his good sense. He forgot that the passing of days and nights meant that his span of life was being reduced without profit. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word pramada in this verse is very significant. A beautiful wife is certainly enlivening to her husband, but at the same time is the cause of degradation. The word pramada means enlivening as well as maddening. Generally, a householder does not take the passing of days and nights very seriously. A person in ignorance takes it as the usual course that days come, and after the days, the nights come. This is the law of material nature. But a man in ignorance does not know that when the sun rises early in the morning, it begins to take away the balance of his life. Thus, day after day, the span of one's life is reduced, and forgetting the duty of human life, the foolish man simply remains in the company of his wife and enjoys her in a secluded place. Such a condition is called apakrishta chetana, or degraded consciousness. Human consciousness should be used for elevation to Krishna consciousness. But when a person is too much attracted to his wife and family affairs, he does not take Krishna consciousness very seriously. He thus becomes degraded, not knowing that he cannot buy back even a second of his life in return for millions of dollars. The greatest loss in life is passing time without understanding Krishna. Every moment of our lives should be utilized properly, and the proper use of life is to increase devotional service to the Lord. Without devotional service to the Lord, the activities of life become simply a waste of time, shrama eva hi kevalam. Simply by becoming dutiful, quote-unquote, we do not make any profit in life. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 2nd Chapter, 8th Verse, Dharma svanustita pumsam vishvaksena kathasuya notpadayad yadiratim shrama eva hikevalam. If, after performing one's occupational duty very perfectly, one does not make progress in Krishna consciousness, it should be understood that he has simply wasted his time in useless labor. So, Om Agyananta Marandasya Jananjanan Shalakya Chakshurun Yatanyana Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So it's very nice to be here with all of you. I feel very honored to have been invited to speak in Sri Vrindavan Dham, Lord Krishna and Balaram's eternal Dham, and Srila Prabhupada's eternal home, and with all of you. Thank you. Echoing Yoginath Prabhu yesterday, you're definitely the stalwart lovers of the Bhagavatam to brave this cold weather and be here. So thank you. Nice to participate in this with you. So in today's verse and purport, Srila Prabhupada is first of all mentioning that the word pramada is very significant. A beautiful wife is very enlivening. He says that pramada means enlivening and also maddening. So he's pointing out that having a beautiful wife is very enlivening to the husband, but it's also maddening, because if he's in the wrong state of consciousness, he may become absorbed in wanting to enjoy with his beautiful wife like that, and thus lose track of the passing days and nights. So this could be a real problem, especially for someone who is interested in making advancement in spiritual life. So is the problem here that the wife is beautiful? Who can answer? No, Vrindavani says no. What's the problem? Right? Huh? The problem is the attitude of enjoyment, right? Beauty is an opulence which is given by Krishna. Beauty, wealth, strength, renunciation. These are different opulences which Krishna possesses in full and which he awards to the living entities according to our karma, like that. And when these opulences are recognized as being gifts from Krishna, and when they're used in the service of the Lord, then they become great assets, right? Just like we understand that historically here in India, beautiful girls were trained from their infancy how to perform beautiful dances for the pleasure of the deity. So you find in these ancient cultures like Jagannath Puri and other ancient temples, they would maintain dancers. And nowadays we get to see these dances, devotional dances, but in those days they were only for the pleasure of the deity, that's my understanding. They would actually train, and they would train from childhood, and they would perform these dances just for the pleasure of the Lord, right? Last couple of years, our family spent a bit of time in Mayapur, and it's so beautiful on Saturday nights when they have the elephant parade, and you see how the girls draw the rangolis. And these are beautiful paintings, but they're just for the pleasure of the Lord. The Lord comes on his elephant, the painting is unveiled, the Lord enjoys it, it becomes prasadam. They walk past, everybody sees it, and within a day or so it's gone, right? But so many devotional endeavors, people use their beauty and their knowledge and their strength and their wealth. Just like here in Vrindavan, when you walk along the former Jamuna bed, the Parikram path, you see the ruins of all these old beautiful structures, parks and gardens and little turrets and things that were all built for the glorification of Krishna, so that pilgrims could come along the banks of the Jamuna, perform puja for Krishna, for Jamuna, like that. So everything is meant to be employed in the service of the Lord. So the problem is not that he has a beautiful wife, but the problem is that he has forgotten, you know, what is his main goal in life. And rather than trying to engage his wife nicely in the service of the Lord, family life is meant to be a cooperative endeavor for the pleasure of the Lord, just like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in one of his songs, he writes, Manasa Deha Gehe Yoki Chumor. Whatever I have, Lord, my mind, my body, my family, please accept them as an offering at your lotus feet, O Nanda Kishore, a youthful son of King Nanda. So the idea is that whatever we have, whether it is just our body and mind, or whether we also have a home and we have fields, we have land, we have a family, we have a kingdom, we have a palace, whatever it is, however small or great, we're meant to use those things in the service of the Lord. And then it becomes perfect. You know, our movement is not a movement so much of vairagya, although vairagya is important, detachment, but it's a movement of yukta vairagya, which means that we use everything in the service of the Lord. One is not detached from objects that are useful to serve Krishna, but one is detached from the concept that these objects are for my enjoyment, right? One time, you know, in the 60s, 70s, a lot of yogis were starting to come to America. So one time the devotees showed Srila Prabhupada a picture of one yogi. His followers were offering him a platter of dakshin. And he was saying, no, 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 take it away. He has no interest. And Prabhupada said, oh, you can take my picture like this. He said, because I will use it all for Krishna, right? So this is yukta vairagya. It's not so much that we, you know, want to hide from others and hide from the general public, right? There's Kauai in the Hawaiian Islands is a very beautiful island, and there's a monastery there that was opened by some Shivites, followers of Lord Shiva, and they have very beautiful grounds, and it's a very sattvic environment. Hawaii, Prabhupada said, if there's any sort of sattvic place left in the world, it's Hawaii like that. It's very nice, you know, like that. So they built an ashram there, and my mother-in-law lives there. That's how I know about it. She used to go. They used to have a Sunday program where the public would come. But then after some years, they curtailed the Sunday program because it was too hard for the monks to have all these people coming, because in Hawaii, people are beautiful and they dress beautifully. And, you know, if you're a Shaivite monk and you're, you know, really trying to neti-neti, you know, like sort of just narrow it down, not this, not that, it's hard to be exposed to material opulence and people that are in a very enjoying mentality, because you may become infected with that mentality, right? So that's there, that's renunciation, and that's laudable, that's valuable. But in Krishna consciousness, we're actually given this concept of yukta vairagya, that there are many opulences, and all these opulences are coming from Krishna, and all these opulences are meant to be employed in the service of Krishna, and doing so, they become great assets, they become very valuable, like that, like we see here in the temple. It's a very beautiful, colorful temple. Every day thousands of people are coming, buying hundreds and thousands of Prabhupada's books, they're buying garlands, they're offering them to the deities, the garlands are coming back as prasadam. It's a festival of light and color and beauty, and the prasadam is served, and there's so many aromas and so many tastes and so many flavors, right? So ours is a very active process of spirituality, very much based on using everything in the service of the Lord. And it's not just philosophy, but it's an entire lifestyle. Spirituality can be begun by something as simple as honoring prasadam, right? This is a very, very powerful tool in the arsenal of weapons given to us by Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada, this honoring of prasadam. And actually, I've heard quite a few stories where Srila Prabhupada, as he traveled around the world, he would often meet with great philosophers from different spiritual traditions, as well as ecumenical people, and even just philosophers who weren't necessarily religious. There's so many philosophies in the West that are more impersonal, like that. Prabhupada would meet with these people, and sometimes they would come and they would have pretty, you know, developed philosophical conversations with Srila Prabhupada. And without exception, before they left, as they were leaving, Srila Prabhupada would always make sure that they got some prasadam. Very important. And even if they, no, Swamiji, you must take. He would insist that they honor prasadam. And sometimes, as they honored prasadam, as they were leaving or after they left, Prabhupada would turn to the devotees and say, now his spiritual life has begun. So they're speaking so much philosophy. And it's very valuable. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that this simple act of honoring the prasadam of the Lord is so powerful, like that. So these are all aspects of Krishna consciousness. Actually, there's one nice story. Actually, one of these persons, a big philosopher, and then the prasadam that he was given was a globjaman, you know, and I think it was in Geneva. He was like somebody from the UNICEF or something, you know, and they handed him a globjaman, and he's kind of looking at it, and Prabhupada's motioning, you know, pop it in your mouth, you know. So then, you know, a properly made globjaman is not just tasty, and it's all very juicy. And if you squeeze it, if you touch it, what happens? So this man's getting the sugar syrup all over his hands. So he pops it in his mouth. You know, devotees are a little anxious. What's going to, you know, and then I'll have another, you know. So, you know, this is very wonderful that we have prasadam, we have kirtan. So ours is not just a process of renunciation, but it's a process of using everything in the service of the Lord. And when you come into, you know, the realm of family life, this is also very important, because, you know, yukta vairagya, it can get a little sticky, because, you know, there's always, the pendulum swings this way, it swings that way, and there's always parameters. So we always have to be very careful. Jai Shri Shri Gornitai Krishna Balaram Radhasham Ki Jai. Just like we don't want to engage in renunciation for the sake of renunciation, we also have to be careful that while employing things in Krishna's service, that we don't become attached to enjoying them ourselves, right? So that's what's happening here. Narada Muni has come to this actually very pious king, right? King Prachinabharishat. He's produced these wonderful sons, the Prachetas, and they're well on their way to spiritual realization. But now Narada Muni has come back, and he's thinking, this father has become entangled. You know, he's a pious grihasta in Vedic culture. He's a king. He's maintaining the people. He's doing his duties. But he's become attached to these duties, and he's sacrificing animals, and he's desiring elevation to heavenly planets. And if he goes on in this way, he's just going to be completely caught in the cycle of samsara, right? You perform pious activities, you get a pious result, you go up and you enjoy. Shinye punye marchilukam visharam. When your fruits are exhausted, you come back down here, you live here, like that. So it's going on, you know, sometimes going up, sometimes going down. One is kind of trapped, and as one remains in this material consciousness, even if it's pious, one is losing the real opportunity of human life, which is Krishna consciousness, right? Days and nights are passing, and we're absorbed in enjoying the facilities that we have, and we're losing track of the prime goal of life. So like as Prabhupada mentions here, this is pointed out in a lot of places. I mean, it comes to my mind the beginning of the second canto. Srila Shukadeva Goswami is also pointing this out. He gives quite a long description of how one becomes attached to enjoying material life, grihamedi, sukham, like that. The days and nights are passing. One is not taking to Krishna consciousness, and what a waste that is. And also, we know the beautiful song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which puts it so nicely. Udina, udila arana parababhage, right? The song goes on like that. I'll just read the first few verses because it's pretty much relevant to this. Udira aruna purababhage dvija mani gora amani jage pakata samuha loya sate gela nagara braje tatai tatai bajulo ko gana gana tahe janjerero jajerero prene dala dala sonara anga charani nupura bhaje mukunda madhava yadava hari bole no bolo re vadana bori micheni da base gilo relati diva se shari de saje e mana dola ba mana vedeho paye ki koro bava na keho ebe na baji de yashara shuta charami pori belaje udite tapana hole yasta dina gelo bole hoibe biasta tabe keno ebe alaso hoi na baji hrido yaraje. I guess we should have sung it anyway. But those are the first five verses, and it really very succinctly deals with this, what's being described. When the eastern horizon became tinged with the redness that heralds the rising of the sun, the jewel among the Brahmins, Lord Gauranga, awakened. Taking his devotees with him, he journeyed through the countryside, towns and villages. The mridangas resounded and the kartals chimed and timed. Lord Gauranga's shimmering golden form shimmered and his footbells jingled. Lord Chaitanya called out to the townsfolk, "You spend your nights uselessly sleeping and your days decorating your bodies. Now just fill your mouths with the holy names, Mukunda, Madhava, Yadava, and Hari, chanting without offense. You have achieved this rare human body. Don't you care for this gift? If you do not worship the darling of Mother Yashoda now, then great sorrow awaits you at the time of your death. With every rising and setting of the sun, a day passes and is lost. Then why do you remain idle and not serve the Lord of the heart?" So he's explaining the same thing in a very nice way, but he's also immediately giving the solution, is that the days and nights are passing, and we're absorbed in material life, we're absorbed in material enjoyment, and we're forgetting the darling of Mother Yashoda. But there's a very simple remedy. We can just put Krishna in the center. We can go on with our household life, but we can just chant the names of Mukunda, Madhava, Yadava, and Hari. We can fill our lives with Krishna's devotional service in very practical ways. And then this whole cycle of samsara is very, very quickly curtailed, and one is able to be reinstated as an eternal loving servant of the Lord. And this is what life is all about. Life is all about loving relationships. It's all about love. And, you know, I just happened to be reading yesterday, my daughter, she gave me a Christmas present, and it was an e-reader, and it was stocked with Srila Prabhupada's books. So I'm very grateful. I started reading The Nectar of Devotion, and in the preface, Srila Prabhupada, he explains this point, and I'm going to read it here briefly, just a couple paragraphs from his preface to the Nectar Devotion, because it totally ties in to this theme. Srila Prabhupada says, the basic principle of the living condition is that we have a general propensity to love someone. No one can live without loving someone. Okay. Maybe it froze. Let's try again. The page turner. Okay. No one can live without loving someone else. This propensity is present in every living being. Even an animal, like a tiger, has this loving propensity, at least in a dormant stage. And it is certainly present in the human beings. The missing point, however, is where to repose our love so that everyone can become happy. So Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain that by reposing our loving propensity in Krishna, then we're satisfying everyone, everywhere, at all times. And the Nectar of Devotion teaches us how to stimulate our original love for Krishna and how to be situated in that position where we can enjoy our blissful life. So he goes on to explain that, you know, originally one is born, one begins to love one's parents and then brothers and sisters, and it expands outward, family, society, community, country, like that. So, but our love can only be fully satisfied when it is reposed in Krishna. So this is the great art in life, is that we have to learn how to repose our natural loving propensity in Krishna. We cannot negate this loving propensity and we can't avoid it. Right, that's a mistake that sometimes we make in spiritual life. There's many spiritual traditions where they really try to kind of wipe that off the board. But in reality, this is our natural position. We are meant to have what we have. We are meant to regain, to reawaken, to revive our eternal loving relationship with Krishna. Right. Like in the Bible, it says man is made in the image of God, right, from the Christian tradition. So the same idea is there, is that Anandamaya Vyasat, that we are all by nature pleasure-seeking, and the real pleasure that we are seeking is the pleasure that Krishna created us for, is to engage in loving relationships with Him, right? We are meant to give pleasure to the Lord, and that pleasure is the prasad which sustains our very existence, right? So these loving relationships are very, very important. And everything else we do, right, is meant to revive this eternal loving relationship with Krishna, right? What's that verse? Smartavyam satatam Vishnu, Vishmartavyam najatuchi. What's the second part? Anyway, always remember Krishna and never forget Him. All the rules and regulations in the Vedic literatures are just meant to help us come to this point. The ashrams, the varnas, the scriptures, the parampara, everything is there to help us always remember Krishna and never forget Him. And remembering Krishna also is remembering ourself. Prabhupada points out that there is no meaning, there's no complete meaning to self-realization without God-realization, right? When we realize our relationship with Krishna, then we realize our true self, because our true self is in relationship with Krishna, and that relationship is a loving one. So as we come to Krishna consciousness and take up this wonderful process, which has been so kindly given by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada, we are given the opportunity to participate in different ashrams according to where we are at individually in our lives. And many of us come as young men or women, and we're able to be a brahmachari or a brahmacharini like that, and we're able to serve Krishna and to study the scriptures and to have no other obligations encumbering us, so that we can really enter deeply into that practice. And it's a wonderful opportunity. Prabhupada has worked so hard to create this society full of temples and ashrams and all these wonderful systems to help us advance. And it may be that one can go from that platform and just realize that, like, my whole goal is to love Krishna and just cultivate that relationship, and that may be all one needs. And that is the highest, the best, the most direct path, right? One may be a naistiki brahmachari, one may take sannyas, one may fully dedicate one's life to loving Krishna, and that's a symptom of a very highly evolved soul who has been cultivating Krishna consciousness very deeply for some time, generally. And it may also be seen that there is a Grihastha ashram, as we're learning about here. And the Grihastha ashram is a special facility which is given that recognizing that these loving relationships are such a fundamental part of each and every one of us, each and every one of us. I'll just go back briefly and read this first sentence again. The way Prabhupada puts it is very succinct. He says, the basic principle of the living condition is that we have a general propensity to love someone. So recognizing that we need love, we need to give love, and we need to receive love. And if we're not yet so spiritually evolved that we can realize Krishna's presence so completely that we can exchange our love with Him, we may need to share these loving exchanges with others in this world. And the Grihastha ashram is a facility where one can do that with devotees of Krishna so that we can come together as a couple and as a family and cultivate Krishna consciousness together, that we can have helpers, we can help each other, we can help one another in Krishna consciousness to advance towards the goal. And again, getting back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Manasa Deha Geho Yokichu Mor. In other words, if we accept these facilities as gifts of Krishna, which He is giving us specifically to help us advance towards the ultimate stage of loving Him purely, then our family life is very, very nice. We can install the deity of Krishna in home, and like Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yami Bhakta Prayachiti Taraham Bhakti Pavitam Ashnami Paitatmanaha, right? Offer me with love and devotion, we can offer our food to Krishna, right? So then the very next verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes on to explain that if we offer everything to Him in the course of our daily life, that by such offerings we become freed from the reactions of our good and evil deeds, and by this principle of renunciation of offering everything to Krishna, we become liberated and come to Him. So family life is a perfect opportunity for doing this, for offering our lives, offering our food, offering our work, like everything. Like you see in the Abhay Charan movies when Srila Prabhupada was born, what did his father do? What was the first thing that he did? Remember? He brought the little baby and he laid them down before the deity, didn't he? And he said, my dear Lord, I am offering you my son, like that. Let him become your servant, like that. So, in this way, family life is an opportunity for us to engage in loving relationships which help us go forward towards reawakening our eternal loving relationship with Krishna, and which help us satisfy the desires and the needs for loving relationships in this world in a way which brings us closer to Krishna rather than taking us away. Because very often we see, if this propensity for love is not honored, very often we see that people may even go away from Krishna consciousness. This happens. There's one place where Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that there's different platforms of our Atma, of our self. There is the body, the mind, the intelligence, ultimately the soul. And our real status is that Atma, the soul. But all these other platforms are very, very important because we're living in this body, right? So we're living in this body for this lifetime, and we have this mind and we have this intelligence, and these things have actually been cultivated even in previous lives to bring us to this point. So these coverings are very intimately connected with the self, and everything has to be balanced and harmonized to help us go forward. He points out that sometimes if there's too much disturbance, you know, intellectually or mentally or emotionally, that one may even be disturbed in one's spiritual life. Because we're not so mature spiritually, right? We understand just chanting Hare Krishna is all you need, but we have the elaborate process of Pancharatrik Vidhi Deity worship to engage our senses and to engage our mind. Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchita, we have to engage our mind and senses in the service of the master of the senses, Krishna. Why? Because we have a mind and senses, because they're very active, because the senses are constantly wanting to go out and touch and smell and see and enjoy, and the mind is constantly thinking up all kinds of new strategies how to accomplish this. So, we have to put Krishna in the center of all that, right? We have to put Krishna in all the center of our life, and so, you know, Prabhupada has given us this movement, and these ashrams are there just to help us do that. And if we're not you know, properly engaged, then it can be very, very difficult. And we've seen, you know, just I was reading this purport reminded me of another purport in the eighth canto, and it was written at a time, I believe it was 1976, but one of Srila Prabhupada's senior sannyasis, who was actually quite, you know, important leader, had come to a point in his life where he recognized that he had to give up his sannyas, ashram, and he wrote to Srila Prabhupada explaining that. And unfortunately, Srila Prabhupada's secretary broadcast that to some devotees, and it was very hard for that devotee, and he went away. And Prabhupada was very disturbed that that was done, and Prabhupada wrote him and begged him to come back. But Prabhupada wrote a purport. It was in the Gajendra series. Very, very wonderful purport. While he was externally in managing his movement, he was going through this crisis, actually, with his disciple, and a bit of a crisis. And Prabhupada wrote about it in his purport. And he was explaining, he was giving the analogy that just like Gajendra was this powerful elephant, and he was seized underwater by this powerful crocodile, right? And then they were fighting for so long. After 1,000 celestial years, the crocodile was starting to win. Why? Why was the crocodile starting to win? Ah, he was an animal of water. So what was happening? He was in his element, right? He was getting nourishment while he was fighting. His mental, his sensual, all of his strengths were becoming stronger as he was fighting. But the elephant, being an animal of the land and being pulled into the water, although he was very, very strong, he was getting weaker, right? So Prabhupada was then giving this analogy. He said that we have to be in a situation that is right for us so that we can fight with the crocodile of Maya. Prabhupada actually uses that term. So he was referring to this struggle that his disciple was going through, was that he was in the wrong situation. But giving up sannyas was not the problem. Giving up devotional service was the problem. So he told that disciple, and he wrote in his purport for all of us disciples and followers, that don't give up Krishna consciousness. In other words, the ashram isn't the thing. The ashram is the platform from which to engage in devotional service. Devotional service is the thing, right? So Prabhupada was teaching that through this very practical example. So he was encouraging him and us that we should never give up the ship, right? No matter how much the boat is rocking, you know, we should stay on this ship of devotional service. And if we don't, if one ashram is not suitable for us, there are other ashrams. If the desire to have a relationship with a devotee of the opposite gender is necessary for us to go forward and to stay in Krishna consciousness, that's fine. Do it by all means, and do it in Krishna consciousness. The main thing is to continue the fight against Maya. The main thing is to continue the fight against the crocodile of Maya. And we have to, Prabhupada would often say, become fixed up, become settled. You know, figure that out, become fixed up. What ashram you belong in, okay, that's fine. Four ashrams are there. Become fixed up. And then get on with your real business of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the real business. The fight with Maya is the real business, right? Prabhupada points out somewhere that when Vishwamitra came to see Janak Maharaj, right? So the first thing Maharaj said was, Punarjanma Jayaya, right? How are you doing in your struggle against material existence, right? This is the question you ask the sage, because the sage, they're struggling to overcome Maya, to become fully realized, to become Krishna conscious, right? So this is the business, right? And Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, they've made it so easy. Everything is nice, right? We're not being asked, you know, it's a little cold now. This is an austerity, right? And I'm out of my element. I'm not used to being this cold, with all due respects. And, you know, the power goes off and our heater doesn't work and the water heater broke down the other day. You know, I'm a bundle of nerves. You know, it's rough. You know? But actually, these are tiny, tiny austerities, right? And we have the opportunity to come together and to take darshan of Sri Sri Gaura-Nitai, Krishna Balaram, Radhe Shyam, to offer Srila Prabhupada's Guru Puja, to be together. So Prabhupada has given us these amazing facilities, and the austerities are very, very small, right? I mean, we can increase them according to our capacity, that's fine, but it should be according to our capacity, and everything is there. Prabhupada has really, really given us everything we need to achieve the goal of Krishna consciousness. And if we are, you know, just What is that? Utsahanishyatayat. You know, engage whatever ashram we're in. We should engage with enthusiasm, determination. At the same time, we should be patient because we've been in this material world a long time. We have a lot of, so to speak, extra baggage. It takes a while sometimes to work through these things. But if we're patient and we go on with determination, executing devotional service by the grace of Guru and Krishna, we'll reach the goal. Right? That's there. So we can have that faith, and whatever ashram we're in, you know, sincere brahmacharis, they make sincere grihasthas, they make sincere sannyasis, they make everything, right? So sincere grihasthas make good sannyasis like that. Nice grihastha families raise nice children, and generally speaking, at least people from my generation, a lot of us started out not as devotees, and we had so many samskaras that weren't so great for advancing in Krishna consciousness. So we spend a lot of our time just trying to counteract rock and roll music, songs in our head from, you know, this and that. You know, then we see children, they grow up and they have Indri in their head and they have this in their head. And they have other things in their head, you know. So as Krishna consciousness goes forward by having nice grihastha families, these children are given a proper situation in which to continue on in their Krishna consciousness, because people who take birth in the Krishna consciousness movement, they're devotees. They were practicing Krishna consciousness. Krishna gave them a birth where they can pick it up more easily, right? We understand that from the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So anyway, the point is every ashram is important. You know, there was a time when Grihastha ashram was, in the beginning, we were a little immature. We kind of looked down on that. You know, I remember when I was a brahmachari, it was like, we had a whole temple full of brahmacharis and there were some brahmacharinis, and one day some guy came down the stairs in white, and it was like all the mouths dropped, and like the guy had his head down, you know, and like, you know. So sometimes, you know, we're a little immature, but the reality is that every ashram is a platform, it is a situation, it is given by God, it is given by Guru. It is there for us to take up the fight to become Krishna conscious and to have the sustenance, the maintenance, the facilities, the emotional stamina and support that we need to go forward in Krishna consciousness. So anyway, I'll read the verse again. Queen Paranjani embraced the king, and the king also responded by embracing her shoulders. In this way, in a solitary place, they enjoyed joking words. Thus, King Paranjana became very much captivated by his beautiful wife and deviated from his good sense. He forgot that the passing of days and nights meant that his span of life was being reduced without profit. So, any comments, questions, corrections? Feel free.
The natural element would be the grihastha ashram, unless you're born a liberated soul. Uh-huh. So, how do we sort of apply that analogy?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, like Yoginath Prabhu said yesterday, he gave a figure of 90% of people, right? Only 10% of people are renounced. And Vrindavan and I were talking later, we were thinking, wow, 10%, that's a lot. But, you know, so it is natural that most people enter into family life at some point. At the same time, Krishna consciousness movement is a very highly spiritually evolved movement. And so you will find people who are very spiritually evolved, and there will be people who are able to live as a renounced person like that, and that's very good, right? So everything is there. Right? So I don't think it's... So you're saying it's hard to understand. Is the hard part to understand that some people are renounced, or...?
Asking us to endeavor to do something that is maybe not so natural to us, to go against the current, or is it not? In the sense that it seems like it is meant to be a somewhat of a struggle of the mind to keep it focused.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a struggle, and it's especially a time of training. I mean, initially, right? I mean, if you look at the Vedic model, it's like 5 to 25. You know, 20, like there's also ages. Of course, a little different here because we come to Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we're already grown up, but in any event, it's a time of training where one can receive this valuable training, and one can do service, and one can fully surrender to Krishna without any other thoughts or any other responsibilities, any other distractions, right? So it's a very important period in anyone's life. that one can just wholly and solely, you know, focus, right, on service to Krishna, because that service attitude of service to Krishna is what's wanted, it's what's needed, and we need to get that, you know. And so if one can be a brahmachari or brahmacharini for some time, if one can live in the ashram of the spiritual master and just dedicate oneself, that will sustain one with spiritual strength and strength of character throughout one's life. You know what I mean? It's very, very important, you know. And but it's also important, and I think it's very helpful, if the understanding is also given that there are four orders, and after this order of training, most of us will enter into Grihastha life. And that's something that we kind of missed for a while. I mean, I used to work with the Bhakti program in America, and I felt really bad later, because we trained them, we gave them basic training, and we trained them to be brahmacharis and book distributors. And it's a very important activity, and it's very pleasing to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. We had that part right, but we didn't have any part in our training manual that said, later on, a lot of you are going to enter into Grihastha life, and here's some very positive, you know, training to go in that direction. We didn't do that. So a lot of times we saw guys that came, and they got really good, and we encouraged them, and they came really good, and they were really great, and all of a sudden, like they hit this wall of like, oh my God, I want to get married. Nobody ever, nobody ever talked about this, you know, and like all the other guys who look at them, like, what's wrong with you, you know? You know, so, you know, that, I agree with you, that training, we have to be more systematic, because if you have it in your mind that I'm doing this for some years, and then it's more than acceptable if I find the need to enter into family life, it's a very laudable thing to go forward. It's not like now you're second-class citizen, but it's like now you can continue devotional service in the next ashram. And so that needs to be there in our training, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's important. You know, just like they say with a girl, she's very young in Vedic culture. She's told that here is your husband, right? And so she has in her mind, she's way before marriage, but she knows that when those desires start to come, things are fixed. Things are fixed up. She can fix her mind on a suitable husband, right? And her mind is peaceful. So similarly, in brahmachari life, in one sense you could say, if you know that all these ashrams are there, and if staying as a brahmachari for life is suitable for me, I'll do it. And if entering into grihastha life is more suitable, I'll do it. And all these things are approved and appreciated by the spiritual master and the spiritual society and Krishna, you know. So if we have that attitude, I think, you know, does that make sense? Huh. Anything else? Any other Prabhu? There's a devotee back there if you want to pass him the mic.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for a wonderful class. You wonderfully described this principle of Yukta Vairagya. I wanted to ask that in many cases, like this, applying this principle of Yukta Vairagya also depends on the advancement of individual devotee. Like advanced devotee can use everything, but a neophyte cannot use. So what is the limit to which we can know that we should use which thing in the service of Krishna effectively, so that we cannot become attached to it?
Yes, yeah, well, that's a very good point. Like I was giving the example of Prabhupada taking the platter of money and saying, bring it here, right? But we don't know of any devotees as mature as Srila Prabhupada, right? So Prabhupada could engage everything and anything in the service of the Lord, right? So at the same time, you know, it's very interesting. Just one time, I'll just cite this one thing about your point, about how careful we have to be. One time I was traveling with some devotees on a bus. They were distributing Krishna consciousness in America. And I was present once to Tamakrishna Maharaj and Vishnujan Maharaj. They were the leaders of the party. And they were discussing this point because some people were offering donations, and they came to know that donations had been earned through illicit activities, actually. And so they were wondering, should we accept this? And in the course of their conversation, one of them mentioned that one time, I believe in Los Angeles, someone came and gave a donation to Srila Prabhupada, and then when that person left, it was mentioned that it had come from some illicit enterprise, and Prabhupada said, put it in the Hyundai, offer it to the deity, because Krishna, he can absorb everything. It's like, there's, you know, he's like the sun. But, you know, so even Prabhupada, maybe, perhaps he was teaching by example, but he was showing that we have to be very, very careful, right? And that's why it's said that the spiritual master is the transparent via medium for accepting service and for accepting dakshin and for accepting all these things, because if the spiritual master is not transparent, if he tries to use those things, then he becomes affected, right? So, you know, that we do have to be very, very careful. And, you know, in regards to the detail of your question, according to our level of advancement, you know, we can utilize more or less in Yukta Vairagya. That's very true. And, you know, the principle of Guru Shastra and Sadhu is always there. So, you know, we can always defer to our authorities if we're not sure about, you know, how to utilize things in Krishna's service. You know, just like I come from the States, so there was a devotee who I knew early on who had come to Krishna consciousness through music. He was a musician, and he had actually come to it that way. And then later, you know, he had the idea, you know, should I start a rock band for Krishna? Like George Harrison writes songs and millions of people become devotees, or thousands of people, maybe I could do the same. Or like Jadarani, you know, she was an artist, and at one point she started studying the old masters and things like that. And then Prabhupada said, actually, you know, we don't have so much time. We don't need to become a famous artist. We just need to please Krishna. And by pleasing Krishna, everyone's naturally pleased, like that. So, you know, we have to take guidance from the spiritual master and from our authorities, knowing how to utilize things in Krishna's service, even our time, how to utilize our time, how to utilize our energy, all these things, right? So, but the guidance is there. ISKCON is organized in such a way that there's lots of guidance there, how to do these things. Does that answer your question? So we should always be careful. Anything else? Okay, well, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.